Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Jake Gutierrez on this Friday, December 22nd, 2017. It's time for the Border Patrol Blitz and Fast Break. Let's start off with Gabe DeArmon from PowerMizzou.com. Missouri. Hi, Gabe.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I won't go with great. I'll leave great for you.
What's holding you back from being great?
I haven't got to talk to you guys yet.
Here we go. Yeah. Prepare to take a step towards greatness. Let's start off with the early signing period. What do you think? Do you think this is going to, or how do you think this is going to change things? Do you like it? Do you not like it? What's your opinion?
I mean, I don't love it. I like it from the standpoint that now the next 2 months are going to be pretty easy. We're going to be following about 6 to 8 kids. So that's going to make things a lot easier for us. But I don't really know who this thing helps. I haven't talked to any coaches that really like it. For the players, they all have to make their decisions 2 months sooner or risk losing spots. There is an argument. Jim Sterk said this yesterday when I talked to him, that maybe it helps a school like Missouri where they've identified these kids and they have them on board and they don't get them poached at the last minute like happened with Jafar Armstrong and Elijah Gardner last year. But by the same token, I mean, Jim Harbaugh offered a kid from Michigan that had been a Missouri commitment for a few months. He offered him, I think, on Tuesday, so, or maybe Monday. You know, it still happens. It just happens sooner. If I were having an early signing period, what I'd like to do is have it in August. And just tell kids you don't get to take official visits before that. If you know where you're going, if there's no doubt in your mind and you don't need any visits, sign in August, you get your one visit to that school. If you don't know, if you need to see some other campuses, hang on, wait, and we're going to have the regular thing in February. I don't see the advantage of having one 6 weeks before the regular signing day when coaches are trying to hire assistants, when they're prepping for bowls. I mean, how many kids are going to sign with the program? And the coach that recruited them is going to take a new job in the next 2 weeks.
And perhaps Missouri not done here in this early signing period?
Yeah, well, we know Chris Mills, cornerback from Texas, is going to sign with Missouri today. Vertus Brown, an offensive lineman from Chicago, and Messiah Swinson, a tight end from New York, are both making announcements today. Missouri is in the final two for both of them. So, stay tuned. Missouri will add between 1 and 3 today.
And the next offensive coordinator, a lot of smoke out there that Jed Fish, who right now is the offensive coordinator and interim head coach for UCLA, and we'll see him leading UCLA against Kansas State in the Cactus Bowl on Tuesday. A lot of rumors out there that he's the guy that's going to take over as offensive coordinator for Missouri. What do you think?
Yeah, a lot of smoke out there. I can't get anybody to tell me it's done, but I think a lot of that has to do with, if it is, Missouri and Fish both want to wait until after bowl games. Like you said, UCLA plays Tuesday, Missouri plays Wednesday. So the earliest I think we get anything official is going to be next Thursday. But, I mean, it's, at this point, that's the guy that I would put my money on. But I can't say it's a done deal at all.
Gary Barnett said that would be a home run hire if it happens for Barry Odom. Do you agree?
I really like it. I think it would be a very good hire. I mean, there are some question marks as far as the offense Missouri ran last year is not at all what Jed Fish has done throughout his career. But, you know, I think a good coordinator is going to kind of blend what he does to the talent that he has on hand. And one thing I really like about it, Jed Fish got a job as Michigan's offensive coordinator in January of 2015. And over the next 3 weeks, Michigan really made a push to sign Drew Locke. So there is a relationship there. And I think next year is all about keeping Drew Locke and doing what you can to give him the best season possible, which then in turn obviously helps Missouri. So I like it from that standpoint.
All right, it's a big week for Mizzou. Saturday night, the bragging rights game against Illinois. And then, of course, Wednesday, the Texas Bowl against Texas. Let's go to the bragging rights game against Illinois. I know you love this this event. And now it's re-energized, not only on the Missouri side with Konzo Martin and the better play. But I think Brad Underwood's going to do some really good things for Illinois, and I'm looking forward to watching these guys coach against each other and recruit against each other in the upcoming seasons. What do you think of this matchup on the floor tomorrow night in St. Louis?
I mean, I think Missouri is the better team right now. I think in the rebuilding processes, Missouri is probably a year ahead of Illinois. I think Illinois is going to get there. I thought Brad Underwood was a fantastic hire. He landed Mark Smith last year. He's got a kid named Io DeSumo coming in next year, who's like a top 30 player. So he's going to get it done there. They've struggled a little bit finishing out games. I think they've lost four of their last six. So I think Missouri's a little bit ahead, but this game always tends to be, you know, closer than maybe the talent on the floor would indicate. So I think I'm just really happy to have this thing back. It's been depressing to be in that building the last two or three years because Missouri wasn't any good. Illinois was mediocre at best. Neither fan base really cared about it. But we're now back to a game that should be fun, and I can't wait. I am anticipating Jeremiah Tillman will get the Ryan Robertson treatment and get booed every single time he touches the ball.
Well, he decommitted from Illinois and now is doing very well at Mizzou, and so I think he'll probably take that because, look, he's where he should be right now. Let's talk about this last game for Mizzou, a one-point victory over Stephen F. Austin. And just like to get your thoughts on that game. And also, we talked a lot about the comments from Kyle Keller, the head coach of Stephen F. Austin, and the fact that Konzo Martin went into Stephen F. Austin's locker room and addressed the team. He said he'd never done that before in his career. But that was a pretty eventful night at Mizzou Arena. And the most important thing is it looks like Mizzou beat what many people feel like will be a tournament team.
Yeah, Stephen F. Austin is going to, for the third or fourth year in a row, be a 13 seed that someone is going to have nightmares about in week one of the NCAA tournament. That's a really good team. A team at Missouri pulled out a win, won a close one late. I mean, they didn't exactly salt it away. They went 1-4 from the free throw line. But Cassius Robertson made the big play. You know, they're sitting. I picked this team to go 11-2 or 10-3 in the non-conference with Michael Porter Jr. The fact that that's what they'll be without him, I think, speaks volumes for the job Konzo has done, getting these guys all on the same page. And immediately after Kyle Keller's press conference, I said, look, I think Konzo Martin's going to be here for a long time, but if for some reason he leaves, I really hope Missouri hires Kyle Keller, because that was a fantastic press conference. We asked like four questions, and I think he talked for about 12 minutes. He was awesome.
He was awesome. All right, Gabe, final question. Bragging rights on Saturday, Texas Bowl on Wednesday. Will Mizzou win both, lose both, or split?
I think they go 2-0. I think they kind of control bragging rights and win it by 5 to 10 points. And I just don't think Texas cares about this football game. Their three best players aren't going. I think Missouri does care about it. I talked to our guy from Texas yesterday. He said, I don't care how bad the Missouri defense has been. The Texas offense is worse. So I think Missouri wins this by two or three touchdowns.
I love you.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Wow. That's, I don't even need that Christmas. No,
I'm sorry.
Steven, you just made my Christmas.
I'm sorry. That was aggressive. Thank you, Gabe. We will talk to you soon.
All right.
I will text you repeatedly tomorrow.
He didn't say he loved you back. He just said, well, good.
Didn't ask for it. Okay. The holiday season is about giving.
That's right. That's right.
And I gave him my love.
It's better to give than receive.
I also love Stan Weber.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas State.
Hello, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Christmas, happy holidays, and Merry Christmas to everybody out there, especially you guys. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. Same to you and your outstanding family. Stan, it felt like the game at Washington State for the basketball team was a game they needed to win, especially after losing that game against Tulsa. But with a win against Washington State in Spokane, ending the non-con on a good note, maybe creating some momentum heading into the conference opener against Iowa State. And look, K-State got it done.
Well, they did get it done. It was wild and crazy, probably awful late for a lot of people to realize what went on, because K-State played very well in the first half. It separated by as many as 17 points, went to the half leading by 10, and looked like a very good team, and then turned around and were behind by as many as 8 when it got down to the last 4 minutes of the game. So it turned, and it was very negative at that point, and then K-State somehow put together a 10-0 run. Dean Wade really played his best basketball season for a few possessions down and became unstoppable down low, and something you hope he learns from. and was aggressive to the basket. Barry Brown made 6 free throws. Every free throw he had an attempt, he made 4 down the stretch with the game on the line, drove the ball to the basket, and K-State finally got some stops. So you just wonder which is going to win out here. You got a couple of momentum-gaining wins, hard-fought at the end of the ball game games, ones that you played pretty well in, better in the first half than in the second half, but still had to go win at Vanderbilt and here in Spokane against Washington State. But then you think about the Tulsa game in Wichita. It went the other way. K-State didn't play good down the stretch. So the momentum is not very strong, but you generally hope that the arrow is pointing up. It was a must-win for the Wildcats in the sense that they did lose that Tulsa game, because if they would have played better in Wichita, it's a great crowd, they would have played anywhere near normal, anywhere near they played every other game this year, their only non-conference loss would be 2 points against Arizona State down in Las Vegas. But instead, they got the 2 losses, don't have any giant wins because that's the way their schedule played out. So, you know, K-State's got a chance. They got a chance if they play well in Big 12 conference play to be an NCAA tournament team again. But that's true of every one of the 10 Big 12 teams.
Let's move over to the football side of things, Stan, and this bowl game coming up against UCLA. We're trying to see if Josh Rosen is going to play in this game. It sounds like there's at least a decent chance that he will. Tell me about your thoughts on whether or not you're going to see him, and if so, what kind of a challenge that'll be for K-State.
Well, I don't know. Each kid makes their own decision. I generally would expect him to play, and then when you're associated with the opponent, you've always got to say, you know, like every coach says, well, I'm expecting him to play. Well, you know, I don't know, but yeah, I would expect him to play, and K-State needs to be ready. The good news for K-State is the fact that they played against some of the best passing games in the country in the Big 12 and some of the best quarterbacks in Baker Mayfield, the Heisman Trophy winner, and Mason Rudolph. These guys are big-time guys right in there with Josh Rosen. So UCLA's quarterback, who may be the number one NFL draft, and their passing game led by star receiver Jordan Lassie, he's very good, isn't really different than what K-State's seen. That doesn't mean K-State stopped them, though. Plenty of quarterbacks have thrown, I think 5 different guys threw for over 400 yards against K-State. It's not a strength of K-State. They just try to live and make a play, get an interception, don't allow red zone touchdowns. So it'll be more of the same. UCLA will be hard to beat with that passing game and the offense they have. They're athletic. But fortunately for K-State, a weakness of UCLA is the fact that they are one of the worst in the country at stopping the run. So K-State is going to scare them as well. Coming at them from an offensive standpoint, K-State could really damage UCLA. So it's really going to be a game of different styles and who can grab that style. And I'd say if it was last year's K-State team, you know, the one that went and played Texas A&M in the Houston Bowl, they had run for 300 yards in games 5 different times, UCLA wouldn't have a chance. If that offensive line and running game that K-State had last year was in play right now with the 2017 Wildcats, K-State would win the game, no doubt about it. They'd control it and take care of UCLA, a team that's 6-6, won all their home games, lost all their road games. I mean, they are all over the board. Their excellence is high, very good, and their problems are big on the other end, including the coach being fired. Jim Mora was let go before the last regular season game. So UCLA is a mixed bag. At their best, they're tough. At their worst, they're easy to beat. Last year's team would have ran right over them. That's not the strength this year, and Skylar Thompson throws the ball well, but K-State's not using the quarterback run game as much right now, and they're not as awesome at the running game, period, as they were last year. So it makes the game more interesting, and the passing game at UCLA will be something to watch. They're good, and we know K-State's going to try to be opportunistic, but it's not easy shutting someone down.
So like you said, Josh Rosen is likely to be the number one overall pick. Now, he doesn't have the crazy numbers the guys like Baker Mayfield and Mason Rudolph have that K-State has faced, but he's got all the tools. He's 6'4". He's like we said, the top NFL quarterback prospect. It looks like when you watch him, what stands out about him, why is he so highly regarded?
Well, he seems to be able to quickly flick his wrist and get the ball to all parts of the field. You know, he throws the deep ball very well, catches guys in stride. He looks athletic and comfortable. I think that his values went way up with Jared Goff's play this year with the Rams. Okay? He looks kind of that type, not overly muscular, more of just like a good-looking high school athlete used to look like in the old days. Like, wow, that kid, what a nice-looking kid. Tall, rangy, looks like he's smart and can throw the ball. So you know, what is Jared Goff? Remember last year when we watched Jared Goff, we said, how in the heck did he end up being one of the top two quarterbacks taken in the NFL draft? I mean, are you kidding me? And then this year he looks unbeatable. So I think Rosen gains a lot of juice because of Goff's play, that it's a little subtle what he did in college. If you look at his college play, guys, I wouldn't pick him number one. I mean, I have Mason Rudolph ahead of him every day of the week. And he may not even be the best quarterback in the city of Los Angeles as far as a pro prospect. So this is not John Elway dominant way better than everybody else. This is going to be what flavor do you enjoy. And an NFL group is going to have a tough time deciding which quarterbacks they want. There's a lot of them, but you know, I don't think he's any different than Drew Locke. I know you don't want to really hear that. It feels good, doesn't it, Stephen? But it feels awful. Also, I know how this can be taken. I mean, Drew Locke could be drafted as quickly as Rosen, in my opinion. But how they decide this and who they decide to number one and who they decide is, you know, maybe later in the first round or in the second round, it's hard for me to decide sometimes. But I think he's just one of many good quarterbacks. He's not the dominant guy. It's not like Carson Wentz is out there. But like I said, Goff, I did not see it when he was quarterbacking in college. I didn't think he was a dominant player. And I tell you what, as the Rams quarterback right now, he is playing great.
Well, speaking of tough decisions, what is Bill Snyder going to decide after this bowl game?
Boy, I don't know. You know, last time when he was in his first tenure, and he was asked a question ever, and he wasn't asked that often. But if he was ever asked, because he was an older man then, are you thinking about retirement? And he said, if you're thinking about retirement, then you should retire. So that was what he said in the past, and that kind of is a message you got to think about in your mind, because he now is saying, I'm thinking about it. He said in his press conference the other day. I don't think he evaluates it the same way now in his latter 70s as he did in his first tenure, but we got to remember he said that at one time and respect that. Otherwise, I would say he's coming back. The indications from everybody who works around him is he is just doing the same thing he's done all the time, and they can't imagine why he would stop or when he would stop. He doesn't take a breath. I mean, every day of the 365 days and the leap years, the 366th day, he has something to do, and it's intense. They can't imagine the day he's going to say, oh, we don't need to get this done today. So I mean, everyone around the program that's really, really close is sitting there going, you know, his coaching staff, et cetera, they're saying, I don't know why he'd quit. And this is what he does great. This is what he's good at. And we think he's healthy and fine and strong, and he'd continue on. So I generally lean toward he's coming back. But you got to respect the fact that anybody who's 78 years old, has gone through throat cancer and all those issues, has every right to say, it's time for me to step to the side. I don't need to burn this kind of energy. So I'm not like 100% to zero. It's more like 55-45. But I'm definitely leaning on the side that I would expect him to be the coach next year.
Stan, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Okay, you guys have a great Christmas.
You do the same thing. That is Stan Weber. Now we will talk to John Kirby. John Kirby from JayhawksLant.com. We'll talk basketball with Jesse Newell at 9:05. But right now, John Kirby, about the early signing period, John Kirby. Let's talk about Kansas, and by the looks of it, a JUCO-heavy early signing period. Tell us what's happened so far.
Yeah, Stephen, you know, they've started off with 9 JUCO signings. You know, Kansas has certainly done a lot heavier than that in the past. So, I mean, you know, at 9, and if they were to get one or two more, you know, here in January, it's kind of where I pegged them. I thought they'd be at 10. So, you know, it's what's expected. They've got some pretty quality junior college players and had to beat a lot of big-name schools out even up to the final wire. So, to be honest with you, if you go back and look, 5 weeks ago, the chancellor had to come out and make a statement that said, hey, I support David Beatty, and, you know, I like his vision, and we're going to go forward with him. So, I mean, he had to come out and give him a vote of support off a 1-11 year. And you really didn't know what he was going to do. But when you look back at that point and where he is now, I think they've done a pretty good job, you know, beating out some of the schools that they did.
So how – I think we're all trying to get our arms around this early signing period and what it means in terms of who's going to sign now and then who's going to sign later. If you had them pegged to 10 JUCO kids, how many kids overall in the class, and what type of a high school recruiting class are we looking at here?
Well, you know, Nate, they, you know, they're going to probably end up, you know, Miles Emery, they're still waiting on him. He's still committed from Blue Valley North. They got Matt Copeland out of an offensive lineman out of Wichita. I mean, those are two of the top five players in the state of Kansas. It was a down year in the state this year, but, you know, Kansas got two of the top five. So, you know, the one thing people don't talk about is they're going to sign 20 kids in this class. They're going to announce 20. They brought five blue shirts from last year that count toward this year's class that are high school kids. So you got five right there that are already in the program that count towards this year's class. So, man, I think it's probably going to be an even Steven deal after they do the, you know, 25. It's probably going to be like 13 high school, 12 JUCO or somewhere in that line.
So let's talk about Miles Emery, because he's right here in our backyard from where the radio station is at Blue Valley North, and you mentioned him being one of the top kids in the state. Has he signed yet, or is he still verbally committed? What are we looking at, and is there still competition for him?
Yeah, no, he's verbally committed. I mean, he went up to several games on unofficial visits this year. He seems pretty locked in. If something happens, I expect it to be, you know, in the February, in the late signing period.
All right, and what kind of a player are we looking at here? I mean, he's ranked highly. Like you said, it's a down year for the state, but what kind of a player are we looking at?
Well, you know, the best thing I would describe, Nate, well, a couple things. Number one, he's, you know, he's 6'5", 230 pounds basketball player. You know, when he gets out of basketball, he's going to put on some weight. Somebody's going to make this kid about 255, 260, because he's got a good frame on him. But, you know, Kansas offered him, and 2 weeks later, they asked him to go down to Norman for a visit. And they offered him on the spot over the weekend. So, I mean, if you want to know what kind of player he is, right there's your answer. I mean, Oklahoma doesn't bring down many Kansas kids and offer them with the first time they see him.
Okay, the quote-unquote jewel of the class so far, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but is this Corion Harris, the defensive back from New Orleans? We've talked with Tony Hull. We know that you know, they brought him in as a former high school coach from New Orleans to try to bring in some big players from that area. Tell us about him, and is he the jewel of the class?
Yeah, right now he's the jewel of the class. At 9 o'clock this morning, they're also waiting on a decision from Puka Williams, who led the state of Louisiana in rushing. He's supposed to announce at 9 o'clock this morning. I'm starting to get, you know, a positive feel about him. He says he's down to Nebraska and LSU and KU. But I would say Corion Harris is the jewel of the class. You know, Arkansas, Auburn, Florida, Georgia, LSU, A&M, you name them. He had them lined up with offers. So, you know, it was something that he stuck with Kansas that whole way and really never wavered and signed with them. And, Nate, I was talking to somebody down in New Orleans yesterday, and they said, man, it takes stones by this kid to do what he did because, you know, down there people are joshing him. You know, hey, you really going to Kansas? Seriously, you're going to really go to Kansas? And they said, just the stuff he heard down there for him to say, yeah, I am going to Kansas. They said it took a lot for him to fight stuff off like that in the comments that he heard.
So let's talk about Puka Williams then, because you said he's making his announcement. Now, I saw and you mentioned the other schools that he's considering. Is Nebraska a surprise there? Is that I don't think I had seen them listed as one of his finalists going into this.
Yeah, they went down. I think it might have been Ryan Held was the one who went down and saw him. I'm not sure. Ryan was a former football player at Blue Valley North. He's on Scott Frost's staff now. But, you know, they offered him. And, you know, when he announced that his decision was going to come out, he was going to announce it. Those were the three schools that he listed that he's considering.
So out of these JUCO kids, can you give us one or two that you think maybe would address a need right away for this team and is most likely to come in and help the team out?
Yeah, Nate, you know, I'd start on the defensive line probably. You know, at the end of the year, Dorrance Armstrong was hobbled. He had a bad ankle. And at the end of the year, Kansas was only playing one defensive end. I mean, it was a pretty sad deal. I mean, they've only signed three defensive ends over the last 3 years. So, you know, in a conference like the Big 12, you've got to be able to put some pressure on the quarterback. And they got a kid named Azur Kamara out of Arizona Western Junior College, about 6'5", 235. I mean, he had Florida State, Ole Miss, Nebraska, Oklahoma State, Oregon, Tennessee. I mean, he had a pretty big offer list, and he was a surprise. I didn't think there was any way they were going to get him, and he ended up signing early with them, although he doesn't get out until May. So he's one. And then another guy that's coming off the edge is a kid named Najee Stevens McKenzie. He, you know, he had Missouri, Maryland, Central Florida, Pitt. I mean, another one of these tall, rangy, 6'5", 225-pound DNs, very athletic. He'll be like your second long third down pass rush guy. So they did some pretty good things up front, and I was, they bought in some corners that I think are going to have a chance to compete right away on the junior from the junior college level.
All right, JK, thanks a lot for the time and the insight, man. We appreciate it.
All right, guys, take care.
That is John Kirby from Jayhawksland.com. We'll talk to Jesse Newell about Kansas basketball at 9:05 back after this on WHB.